Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the weekly meeting of the Park City Rotary Club. I'm Tom Kelly and happy to be your host to welcome everyone here to the Grubsteak Restaurant and also all of our live listeners on KPCW Radio. We appreciate the partnership with KPCW to bring you this candidate forum live. This is a program we've been doing for many years here. Before we begin, just a few words about the Park City Rotary Club. We've been in existence now for just about 40 years, and during that time, we've provided over $1 million in support to various causes here in Park City. We're now one of three Rotary Clubs in town, the Twilight Rotary Club being the newest, and of course our sister club, Sunrise, and great to have all of them here, and hope to see all of you out this Saturday for Park City Sunrise Rotary's Shot Ski on Main Street. Rotary is about service. And there are 33,000 Rotary Clubs around the world, 1.2 million Rotarians, all of us engaged in service to our respective communities. This past weekend, we were proud to sell 74 pies out at Harvest Fest to raise $2,000 for the Recycle Utah cause. Just a week ago, we gave out $20,000 in small nonprofit grants and two special impact grants. We were really proud to do that. This past spring, we provided $10,000 in scholarships to Park City High School students. So we appreciate the opportunity to serve you here in this community. We're very proud of this community, and one of the things that we like to do at Rotary is to develop these candidate forums so you, the public, and Rotarians as well can learn a little bit more about the candidates. To conduct this today's candidate forum, please join me in welcoming from KPCW, Emily Means.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for coming in around lunchtime. I know, you know, this is a good busy time for Park City people. Isn't it like a good time to hike or something? Is it? I don't know. Were you hiking? You came from a hike. Thanks again to the Park City Rotary Club. Like Tom said, I'm Emily Means. I'm the Park City beat reporter at KPCW, and we are broadcasting live from the Grubsteak Restaurant in Prospector for this hour-long event. Can I adjust this mic a little bit? It's really... So we're less than a month away from the November 5th general election, and registered voters will begin receiving ballots in the mail next week. There are six candidates for three open seats on the Park City Council, one seat being vacated by Councilmember Lynn Ware Peak, and two currently filled by Councilmembers Nan Worrell and Becca Gerber, who are seeking re-election. Participating in today's forum in alphabetical order from right to left, if you're looking at the table in the front of the restaurant, we have Max Doylny. You can give a wave, Max. That's Max. Current City Council member Becca Gerber, Daniel Lewis, Ed Parijan, Deanna Rhodes, and current City Council member Nan Worrell. First, the candidates will have the opportunity to give a 60-second opening statement. Then I'll ask a few of my own questions to the candidates. And after that, the audience will have a chance to pose your own questions. I know we have a very engaged audience today. Questions may be directed at only some of the candidates. Please keep your answers brief. You get up to 2 minutes to respond, and for those in the audience who wish to ask questions, I want to encourage you to ask specific questions of specific candidates. If you do have a question for all the candidates, you should ask one where the answer can be short. It could be a yes or no answer, or just a simple, you know, one sentence answer. If you happen to be listening via KPCW, you can also ask questions on KPCW's Facebook page. We'll be checking that, and we hope to get some good ones from there too. After we're done with questions, we'll wrap with 30-second closing statements by each of the candidates. So let's get into it. All right, feeling good? I'm really excited to be here.
Is there opening music? No?
You know, I didn't set that up. I thought you were going to bring that. But why don't we start, we'll start with Max for opening statements. So you have 60 seconds, Max.
Thank you, Emily. My name is Max Doylny. I learned to walk in Park Meadows, swim at the Racquet Club, read at Parley's Park Elementary School, ski at Park City Ski Area, ride everything on wheels, and build friendships here in Park City. I've been a substitute teacher at every school in the school district. In my early years, I worked at the golf course, landscaped Quarry Mountain, tuned skis, and served food on Main Street. I'm now the center point of a multi-generational Park City family. For the last two decades, I've owned and operated local-centric businesses in Park City, and now I'm raising my children here. I want to give back to the town that's in my soul by serving on the City Council. I have the perspective that will help Park City move forward with the lessons of the past and an eye for the future.
Becca Gerber. Hello, I'm Becca Gerber, and Park City is my home. I grew up in town and I graduated from Park City High School and then the University of Utah. After college, I wasn't sure quite what I wanted to do with myself, so I came back to Park City and taught skiing, coached swimming, and I worked for nonprofits and events. I did a little bit of everything here. I am currently director of marketing at Aloha Ski and Snowboard Rentals. I worked very hard to stay here, and I still do. When I ran for council 4 years ago, I was looking to provide the perspective of workforce, young families, and those still trying to hold on to their place in Park City. I felt that I could provide key insight into the affordable housing discussion, climate change, and what that will mean to both our community, economy, and more. I believe I have provided that perspective and have been instrumental in moving the city's forward on our housing goals and making decisions that benefit our residents. I am so overwhelmingly proud and in awe of all that our community has accomplished over the past 4 years. I am running for re-election because I want us to continue down the path we've started and hold on to the momentum we've built going into the future.
Daniel Lewis.
Thank you very much. My name is Daniel Lewis, and you probably remember me from such nonprofits as the Park City Christian Center, Mountain Town Music, and the wonderful Egyptian Theater, not to mention Park City Film. Through these amazing nonprofits and community building, I am so proud to be a part of this community and know how much I know because of these wonderful, wonderful nonprofits. And because of that, that's why I'm deciding to run for Park City City Council to try to bring a part of that to the City Council. Thank you very much.
Ed Parisian.
Hey everyone, my name is Ed Parisian. I've been an Old Town resident for 13 years. Thank you all for coming. You know, I got immersed in this community right off, joining the softball, hockey, tennis leagues, and meeting many cool, fun, happy locals. I was hooked on the town. Locals are the backbone of this proud community. They fight for what is right, be it education, open space, and socioeconomic diversity. They protect it like a child. So I, along with many other locals, fought to preserve the library field, fought Treasure Hill development, fought Vail's trademark attempt, fought the Kimball Garage party deck and others big and small. But opposing things only maintains the status quo. It's like playing defense. We also need to look and plan forward to keep putting forth progressive ideas to play offense. My campaign is focused on locals, happy, content locals. Happy locals are what will keep us together in good times and bad. And please know that I put a lot of thought into my viewpoints and ideas, incorporating all my past experiences into what I am today. My campaign is all about you, the local community.
Deanna Rhodes.
Park City only works when it works for everyone. We need to reevaluate how we are engaging our friends and our neighbors. And through my experience, I have broad perspective of the people who make this community special. Our problems, such as traffic and transportation, affordability and affordable housing, and growth, affect all of us. And these substantial problems require regional collaboration. As a community organizer, I have been building relationships along the Wasatch Back. I majored in political science, and I interned at a state legislature. In 2017, I helped coordinate the transportation for the Park City Women's March, a major traffic event for this community. Ever since then, I've been working as a citizen advocate, and I'm passionate and committed to solving the Park City's most pressing needs.
Nan Worrell.
Well, thank you to Park City Rotary and KPCW for hosting this event today. I'm Nan Worrell, and I'm running for a second term. Because while this is a very exciting and pivotal time for our community, we have many challenges ahead of us. Change is inevitable, and unfortunately for many, we're no longer the sleepy little mountain town we once were. As you may know, our total budget for this fiscal year is nearly $184 million. We may have only about 8,300 full-time residents, but we must operate as a larger city because of the complexities of what we deal with here. Because I was on the Planning Commission for 5.5 years before being elected to council 4 years ago, I have a deep understanding of the details that drive the operation of our city. It takes a lot of time, dedication, and experience to serve on the City Council. I've proven that I have all of that, and I look forward to the discussion today.
Thank you so much. Just a reminder, Renee is holding up the time, so look to her if you're wondering how much time you have left for your response. This question is for all the candidates, but like I said, please keep your answer brief. The Mountain Towns 2030 conference in Park City last week brought together policymakers, nonprofits, and businesses to discuss ways to address climate change in their mountain communities. What are three things you do in your day-to-day lives to reduce your personal impact on the environment? And let's start with Nan this time.
Thank you. We have changed out all of our light bulbs, and so that was a starting for our household. On a daily basis, I carpool whenever I can. I do not live near transit, and so it's very difficult for me to get to the bus stop. It's about a mile and a half away. So I rely on carpooling as often as I can. You know, sustainable waste is important to me, and so I'm very careful about the purchases that I make at the grocery store to make sure that the containers they're packaged in are recyclable. And also when I eat out, that often affects the choice I make as to which restaurant I go to, because I like to know that people are using sustainable practices when I go out.
Deanna.
Thank you. So what I heard at the Mountain Town Conference last week, which many of you were at the opening session with Dr. Goodall, was about empowering women. And so that's something that I do in my daily life, is I work to empower women and help educate young people and help encourage women to get into races such as this one and several others as well. So that's something that I took away from that conference last week.
Ed.
Thank you. A lot of people don't know this about me, but I've been green since before green was green. I ran a recycle center back in the 80s before curbside. I was using reusable grocery bags in the 70s. I made them myself. Everything I do is green. I started the City Park recycling program on my bicycle. I lug 3 tons of stuff, zero carbon footprint. I take the bus every chance I can. I mean, everything I do is green. I won't buy anything if I can't recycle it, if it doesn't fit my lifestyle. I mean, I just, everything, my whole life revolves around green and recyclables. So, there you go.
Daniel.
Thank you very much. Ed is so green that it bleeds over onto me. It really does. When we opened up the hockey arena, we used to get in arguments about what could and could not be recycled. Truly, it was something special. He honestly did bleed over on me. I'm really proud to not own a car here in Park City. That was the greatest accomplishment of my life. And I am so proud to live where I do live on Marsac, to allow me to walk everywhere, to take the public transit. It really is special to have the public transit here. And just like a lot of other people, you know, I don't buy what I can't recycle. And I love what Nan said, is that a lot of people here in Park City and a lot of business owners, they go the green route, and it's the way to go if you're going to have a lot of customers coming in that have a green thumb.
Becca.
So I have really tried to embrace a greener, more sustainable lifestyle at my house. I'm using soil to spoil and composting, eat locally, recycling. This summer I hardly drove my car. I rode my electric bike everywhere, and I really feel like that has been a big part of me growing more aware of what I can do at my house. But I do think that something that I'm also proud of is that I strongly advocated for the city to set the 2032 renewable energy goal. And I also was very much in favor of us moving it up to 2030. So I don't think you can advocate much more strongly in your personal life, or act much more strongly in your personal life, than actually voting and making these motions where it counts at the local government level. And I also would say that walking away from MT 2030 and going home and looking at my 1.5-year-old kid, I am more dedicated and compelled than ever to do everything we can possibly do in Park City to make sure that he has a bright future with snow and an environment that will be healthy for him.
Max.
I do all the same things most of the candidates have mentioned here, reduce, reuse, recycle, and in particular, rot. We compost in our backyard, and adding to Becca's statement here, I have young children and we're teaching them what that means to reuse your food waste and plant a garden in your backyard and watch things grow. Paul Hawken at the Mountain Towns 2030 conference mentioned, or he referenced his number six in his book, Drawdown, is to educate young women. And I have a 1.5-year-old daughter, and we're trying to educate her from the very beginning to respect the planet. We bike, we ride one wheels all over the place, and my son yesterday got in the car as I picked him up, and he said, I sure wish we could use less gas. Maybe we could just plug everything in. And I thought that we're doing an all right job there.
This question is for our two incumbent council members, Becca Gerber and Nan Worrell. Last week, news that city manager Diane Foster was separating from Park City Municipal dominated local media coverage. The move seemed unexpected from the outside. How do you think it could impact this election and the way the city achieves its goals moving forward? And let's start with Becca.
Understandably, we can't talk much about it, but I do think that it's important to know that we came to a decision as a council, and we didn't take the fact that this was an election season into consideration. And I think that that's what you want. You want elected officials that are going to make hard decisions when they need to be made. And we didn't do it taking into consideration what was good for ourselves, but what was good for the community. And so I hope that it doesn't affect the election, because I believe we had to make a very difficult choice, but we felt that it was the right thing to do for the community.
Nan.
I agree with Becca. I was not elected by the voters of this community to do what was politically advantageous for me. I was elected to lead, and our council felt that that was the best decision moving forward. And we did not, as Becca said, take into consideration how that might affect us individually and politically. You know, moving forward, I think that we're on track with our goals. Park City has an excellent staff. We have a sharp interim city manager in place, and so I see us moving forward well.
This question is for Ed and Max. Ed, I think you're semi-retired from a career in business, right?
Right.
That's the way
semi
to describe
is
it.
The word, I
semi.
Guess.
And Max, you're a current business owner. We have a strong economy now in this state, and with that comes more visitors, more people coming to buy things, more people coming to ski, people coming to events, and with those people comes problems such as traffic congestion or housing that's not accessible to locals because it's rented out as a nightly rental. Have we overmarketed Park City is the first part of the question, and what's the number one thing the city should be doing to mitigate the impact of tourism on the community? So let's go with Ed first.
All right, thanks, Emily. Yes, I think we've overmarketed this town. Years ago, they decided to become a world-class resort. That was fine then. Now that we are, I think there's some issues that go with that. You know, the amount of money that's spent by the Chamber marketing this town is astronomical, $8 million a year. They do nothing to mitigate it. So yeah, I think at some point, you can't just keep growing the tourist base. I mean, we're living at the top of a canyon. We have dead-end streets. So at some point, and that's my question to everybody, is where is the point where you start losing community and becoming a shell? What we can do is what we are doing. You've got to mitigate. There's a big light shining in my eye over there. You've got to work on the traffic issues. You've got to work on the socioeconomic issues. You've got to just keep fighting, and maintain the community balance.
Max.
Park City is right in the center of one of the fastest growing regions in the entire country. marketing maybe got us here, but we are one of the most desirable places to be in Utah, and the people are not going to stop coming. I don't think we have a marketing issue. We have a mitigation issue. Traffic and housing are huge issues for Park City. To come in here and say that I have a silver bullet for something that we've been discussing with the smartest people in Park City for a long time would be presumptuous. I do believe that we have a parking issue. If we continue to build parking spaces, we're going to continue to have more traffic issues. Parking is one of the most expensive parts of building affordable housing for a developer. It's one of the most expensive parts of mitigating for the city. So I think we need to look at our master plan and our municipal code, and we need to really address some of those issues firmly with some sacrifice from town to address how fast we're growing and the number of people who are going to be continuing to come here.
Do any of the other candidates want to respond to that question? Okay. We'll move on to the next one then. KPCW has been doing a series of reporting on workforce housing as we head into the peak winter season, which will bring thousands of workers into town. Becca, Deanna, and Daniel, you've positioned yourselves as candidates that can represent workers in this community. What do you think the city and the large employers should be doing to better accommodate and support their seasonal workforce? And let's start with Deanna.
Thank you. So I am a working person in town. I have worked at Main Street, and I've worked at Starbucks on Park Avenue. I've worked seasonally, and I've worked in the nonprofit sector. And I think when we're talking about seasonal workers, we are talking about something slightly different when we're talking about who we're trying to house. And so if we're talking about seasonal workers, I think we obviously need to bring the resorts into the conversation. And the way we do that is we show them best practices. We tell them what the need is and where we need to go. And then we encourage them to mutually set goals together, and then we need to report on that publicly and often. So that's how I believe that we address seasonal workforce housing in this community.
Daniel?
Wow, thank you, Deanna. I mean, that says a lot right there. I could not agree 100% more with what she just said. And what she's trying to say with what I hope to add on is that what I have been doing at the Christian Center is being allowed this knowledge. There are 2,500 international students that come to Park City just to visit, to work here every year. Where do they go? Where do they stay? 8 of them, 10 of them in certain places that are unmentionable that we find out after the end of every year, that they tell us that there's somebody charging an astronomical rate. We need to have a better discussion of what's going on and a better understanding. The city, everybody in the city needs to know that we can open up our homes to these international students. We can actually have a cultural exchange. And not to mention, we need a little bit of oversight. Where are they coming from? Who are they? What do they need? And who's representing them? Who's sponsoring them? Who are these companies? Just to tread a little bit on the tip of the iceberg, but that's where we need to start a discussion, where they're coming in from. Thank you.
Becca.
So the city has decided over the past, since we've started our housing program recently, to focus on year-round housing. We're not focusing on seasonal housing, and I do believe there is a role for the businesses to play in town discussing seasonal housing. And so the resorts are going to be big players in that, of course. As they hit their next rounds of development, they're going to have obligations that we need to make sure that they fulfill. And there are also other opportunities to work with our business community. I've been reaching out to the chamber to actually reach out to its members and ask, how is having workforce shortages affecting you in the winter time? Are you able to fill all of your positions? And if you're interested in participating in a solution, what does that mean? Are you willing to put money behind it? How much? And so I think that those are some things we need to work with our business community on, actually finding some answers to those questions so that we can make some plans to move forward and help them. We don't need to solve all of the seasonal workforce issues in our town. Our businesses need to step up and do that, but we can act as a hub or a centralizing force to help them come up with a plan.
Max, you wanted to respond?
Yeah, as a business owner and somebody who employs up to 60 seasonal workers a year for the last 16 years, I believe that I can speak to and represent that population relatively well for the city. Also, my relationship with Vail, I work closely with them on a seasonal basis, gives me some perspective on how involved they are in that conversation. And to top it off, I think that the city needs to make sure that they require developers, when they're developing, to put their affordable housing up first, their workforce housing up first, and they have to abide by those rules that we set so long ago.
Did anyone else want to respond? One finding in the Park City Community Foundation's social equity report is that there isn't much diversity among boards, commissions, and elected office positions. Somewhere from 20 to 25% of Park City's population identifies as Latinx or Hispanic, and all the candidates at this table are white. How can the city work to get more representation in City Hall? And I think I'll direct this to Nan and Deanna.
That's an issue that we've been working on for years. When I was at the People's Health Clinic as their executive director for 8 years, that was something our board struggled with, was how do we diversify? And it comes down to language. It comes down to the hours that the meetings are held. And it's unfortunate that many of the boards and commissions meet during the time when many folks from the populations we're trying to attract to our boards are at work. If people are working two or three jobs and then have family responsibilities when they get home, they simply don't have the bandwidth to be able to participate at a level that we'd like them to. And so one of the things I'd like to see us do at the city is to continue as a council to look at what barriers are there for people being willing to serve on the council.
Deanna?
So I had no idea that you would answer in that way, so I will reiterate it quite a bit. But in addition to the hours of working, something that happened to with me when I was working on Main Street, I was right at the time of the parking, being paid parking at China Bridge. And the answer to us workers was, well, come to City Hall and give us a piece of your mind. And that meeting, the city council meeting, is at 6 p.m. on Thursdays. That is a shift change for everyone on Main Street, and there's absolutely no way that those workers are going to be able to come to that meeting. And so I would absolutely say you have to evaluate, and I think it's variety. You know, sometimes 6 p.m. on Thursday works, and sometimes it doesn't. And I would also say location, especially when we're talking about our Latino community. There are buildings in this community that don't feel welcoming, and I think actually the council chambers is not welcoming. If you've never been there before, there is a door that's closed with a red light on it that symbols do not come in here and do not give us your opinion. And if you've never been there before, that's how it feels. And so I think we need to make changes, and it's little things, but they do begin to add up.
Would anyone like to respond?
I also Becca. Feel that on council, and we can start to act and lead the way. We have the library board, the recreation board, historic preservation board. We have a lot of boards at the city that we can start to lead the way on. And I think that we also need to invite different people to the table. It's one thing to decide that when your peers have already applied to some of these boards, but it's a whole nother thing if you don't know anyone that's on this board. So maybe it's up to us at the city to start to invite to go to these different populations. We do have connections through the Christian Center, through Holy Cross Ministries, and through Park City Community Foundation and PC Unidos. We have lots of leaders in town, and I think that there's an opportunity for us to invite them to the table.
Ed?
Just want to add that a lot of times with ethnic groups, when you're new to an area, you tend to stick together because that's comforting. You look at the United States all through the years. There's certain ethnic groups that come in and they stay together. One thing we need to do is break through that and make sure that they are welcome in the general community, make sure that their voice is heard in the general community, reach out especially to the kids. Sometimes it takes a generation. So you the mothers and the fathers who have come here for a better life for their children, we need to reach those kids and, you know, get them involved at a younger age.
You're listening to the Park City Rotary Park City Council Candidate Forum on 91.7 KPCW in Park City. The time now is 1 p.m. And I'm sorry, Daniel, it looked like you wanted to respond to that question as well.
You know, I was just going to say, again, we have this wonderful, wonderful concert series that Brian Richards just started with Mountain Town Music's board, a wonderful cultural exchange that we have for a Latino concert series at City Park. And just seeing the growth of the Latino Arts Festival through the Christian Center, of all the hard work that everybody's done there, and the community that comes out, and all the meetings that I've been to, I just want to say, give it another year. You're going to have a lot of diversity coming in to run for these city council, county council, and a lot of other boards. Just give it one more year.
I think we'd like to now open this up to the audience. So if you have a question, raise your hand, and we have two people in the audience with microphones. And I also wanted to remind the candidates that if you have any follow-up comments to add, please do so. Kind of, you know, make me aware of it, because we want this to be a conversation. So does anyone in the audience have a question to start us off? Can you say your name as well?
Father Bob Busson, and I want to applaud the work of the council. And my questions are directed particularly to Nan and to Becca. I appreciate the great work you're doing on low-cost housing. I have a concern about the other homes in Park City that have been going increasingly the way of nightly rentals. And when that happens, as it continues to grow, we lose our resident population, who are the people who also run for our councils and committees and everything else. And my question is whether it is in the domain of City Council and by our own laws and policies, is there anything we can do to not do away with Airbnbs, but put it back into balance so that we can retain our resident population?
Let's start with Nan.
That's a great question, and one that we've struggled with as a council, because we've looked at what if we rezone the areas that nightly rental is allowed in. And when you think of it from a property owner perspective, that's very difficult to do once the horse is out of the barn, to take it back and try to put it back in there. I was really encouraged last week at the MT 2030 conference, because we got to spend a lot of time offline talking with different electeds and city managers from different jurisdictions. And I heard about a program from Vail that's now being implemented in Breckenridge that I think we need to take a serious look at. And that's where the city incentivizes people to deed restrict their homes, makes it financially advantageous for them to do that. And then once those homes are deed restricted, it takes them out of the possibility of putting them back into the nightly rental market and makes that property available. So it's been very successful in Vail. Breckenridge is just kicking that off, and I can't wait to explore it here.
Becca.
Well, in addition to the zoning, our state legislature has made it impossible for us as a city to enforce on Airbnbs. We've kind of got our hands tied. And unlike Colorado, where they have home rules and they can decide in different cities how they'd like to work with their Airbnbs, here there's a statewide bills that kind of make it so that we can't do we can't go in and say we're going to cap the number of Airbnbs in this neighborhood, or we can't even actually enforce on anything other than complaints. So if people have too much occupancy or something like that, we need someone in the neighborhood to let us know so that we can go and enforce on it. But we did bring in some new software this year, and so what we are doing is sending out emails and letters to all the Airbnb owners that we're finding online. And the software is very advanced software, and I don't know if I can do it justice, but it goes through the Airbnb and VRBO listings, and it gives us an address and a homeowner, and we send them letters that say, hey, you haven't paid your business license, or you're not in compliance, and you're not paying your taxes. Can you please do that? Because we can't say you have to do that, you must do that. We're not allowed to by the state legislature again, but we can ask them to do that. And we are starting to get people paying taxes and coming into compliance, getting their business licenses. So that's one thing that we're doing, but it is very difficult, and we're going to have to work really hard and talk about who we are as a community to try to do anything more. And we're gonna need some help at a higher level.
Deanna?
So I wanted to chime in and just,
reiterate and upright what Councilwoman Worrell said. I actually heard of that program as well, and I think that that is a really great solution. And why I'd like to upright that is because it's innovative and it's creative, and it doesn't say, we can't do it. There's all these reasons why we can't. And I think that's the solution to our housing problems, is that we have to be creative and we have to think outside the box and we have to start looking at solutions like this one. And the only thing I'd like to offer and add to the actual plan that Nan put out there is that I think that we're sitting in the neighborhood right now that we need to look at first. These condos and apartments in Prospector are exactly the places that this program can be very successful, so that at point of transfer, when someone is purchasing the condo, they can opt in to do the deed restriction, and we can incentivize them to do so, and we can start to take back control of our community. Ed?
Yeah, thanks, Emily. So this topic is near and dear to me. I mean, this is one of the core issues in my campaign is VRBO, Airbnb, second homeowners. 80% of Old Town is second homes. If you look at the nightly business license fees, they are ridiculously tiny. I think it's $28 a bedroom, which is basically a city subsidy to say, hey, come on in and do this. I think we should raise the business license fee a lot. We could raise the money that way to do some of the other programs. One of the things I want to do is to have the city buy an existing home or two every year. The money we raise from raising these business license fees could pay for that. It would be a win-win all around.
Daniel or Max, did you want to chime in or not?
I think I'd just like to add that right now Park City is doing a survey called Vision 2020, and we're reaching out to the residents to figure out how residents of Park City want us to move forward. Those results will dictate to us sort of the direction that Park City wants to see us go. Do they want us to act bold, or would they like us to just be a rider and be consumed by the surrounding community? So if you have a chance to go to parkcity.org and find those questionnaires, please do so, because the more input we get there, the better informed we'll be about how to make these decisions going forward.
Daniel.
Thank you very much to come in at the very, very end to just say I would like to agree with everybody here. But, you know, people call me crazy all the time, but I can't tell you over the years, especially Miles, they call me, Daniel, you're crazy. And I say, you know what? You're right. And how many of those crazy ideas have we implemented around these wonderful organizations, nonprofits in this city, and especially on Main Street, a dozen of them with the Park City Sunday Market that I'm so proud of, because those crazy ideas come to fruition. Everybody's idea needs to be heard. You need to fill out that survey, and everybody's crazy idea, put it down, because you know what? That just might be the best idea out there. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the audience? Yes, over here.
Stanton Jones. I'm curious, I would like to have each of you tell us how many years each of you have lived full-time in Park City, and what's your number one priority for the next, not long-term, but next 2 years? What's your biggest concern, what's your biggest priority that you want to knock off?
Let's start with Becca.
31 years. And I would say housing, but after spending a week at MT 2030, climate change and housing, can't pick one.
Max?
32 of 42 years with 43 season passes now. And I'm with Becca. I think climate change was illuminated this week, and it needs to be our number one priority, beginning with trying to figure out how to mitigate the soil in the north of Main District and or the new Arts and Culture District. I think that's a huge, huge issue.
Let's go to Nan.
I've lived full-time in Park City for a little over 12 years, and my top priorities are slowing spending and fiscal responsibility.
Deanna.
I have lived in Park City for 4 years, but what I bring to the table is a very broad perspective of the other communities that I have lived in. And I grew up in a town that was just like Park City in the way that community matters, and I know how to build those relationships. And so as I've been here, I have done every single thing I can possibly think of to get involved and to represent a broad perspective of this community. And my number one priority is building relationships along the Wasatch Back and getting to the table with regional collaboration to actually solve some of these issues that we're facing. Ed.
All righty. I've been here 13 and a half years now as a full-time resident. Stanton, to answer your question, I don't think in 2 years we can solve any of the problems. I would like to see us gain traction on all of the problems in the next week, if we could. But in 2 years, we've got traffic, we've got housing, we've got overgrowth of tourism, we've got, what do we got? Clean air, we've got, you know, climate change. None of these are going to be solved in 2 years, but we need to start today, and we need a plan for 2 years. A detailed plan of what we can do, how we can do it, when we're going to do it, and start today.
And Daniel.
All righty. Well, born and raised in Camas, Utah. Howdy there. Summit County resident my whole life, 37 years now, and Park City resident, 16 years. There you go, Stanton. And in the next 2 years, I would really like to have a broader discussion and what I want to have see worked on, and you really surely can't fix it in 2 years, is pollution. The pollution and transportation. You know, we have this wonderful city that we keep pristine, and we work so hard. You work so hard at recycling. I know Becca works so hard at recycling, and Max does, but now we have all these people coming into our beautiful town, and they don't know how to recycle things like that, or they just don't care, and all of our efforts are being flushed down the drain. So we need to really look at that and see how we can make that a better and bigger priority to have this education. To, if you're coming into our town, driving into our town, let's try not to pollute it as much. And I really think that needs to be discussed in the next 2 years. Thank you.
We have another audience question.
Sandra Morrison from the Park City Museum. So 20 years ago, the city annexed 1,700 acres into town through the Flagstaff Annexation and Development Agreement. And with that agreement, there was the intention to preserve the historic mining structures that still survive today in Deer Valley. Part of that agreement also provided a funding source to do the stabilization and maintenance work, and that was through a 1% real estate transfer fee. The city, I understand, to date has collected $9 million through that fee, and apparently there's $2.5 million still in the bank unspent. So my question is two-part. One is, do you support the stabilization and maintenance of the last remaining historic mining structures in Park City? And then the second one is, would you choose to spend a substantial portion of that $2.5 million towards those efforts?
Are those yes or no questions, Sandra? Okay, then we'll start with Ed.
Oh, thanks, Senator. I've been following that issue. As you know, it's been ongoing. My answer is, a deal's a deal. If a deal was made to fix them, the deal should be upheld. The deal should be supported. If it's not, we got to find the people that made the deal. And I know the people that made the deal are no longer around. So we still are responsible for, I mean, we market ourselves, we lever ourselves as a mining town. And to let these structures go unattended and to fall down is just shameful. It doesn't go to our core. I mean, these are the people that worked in these structures and made this town. We owe them the respect to keep this stuff alive and well.
Daniel.
Yes and yes to Sandra's question. I do believe that, my goodness sake, we wouldn't be anywhere we are now without those 22 millionaires that made Park City what Park City is, those wonderful mine operators before 1900. That's really amazing. And to keep those structures up, to resemble them, and to give them their memory. And in their honor, I really do believe that that's our heritage here in Park City. We all go hiking up there, we see them, and if we're going to preserve them, I do believe that we just need to follow through with that.
Becca.
Absolutely. And first of all, I would like to thank the Park City Historic Preservation Board and also our Historical Society for being staunch advocates that we go back and abide by what was laid out in the Flagstaff Agreement. There have been a lot of us that have been asleep at the wheel. The city had some responsibilities that fell through over the last 20 years. You know, the Empire Pass, Flagstaff developers, Deer Valley, there were a lot of people that were playing in things that were preserved, haven't been, and we've seen the consequences of that. And so thank you for coming forward and making sure that we were reminded of our obligation and we follow through with it. And I am in favor of us using as much money. I haven't seen the audit of that fund yet, but I am in favor of using that money toward the historic preservation, and I think that there's a lot more that we can do moving forward. And I also think it's interesting because Ed said, you know, the people that made those deals aren't around anymore, but I really appreciated Sally Elliott's comment. You know, I was 55 when that deal was made, and I'm 75, and it's time for you guys to get going on it. So there are still people in town that were here and remember, and I just appreciate having that perspective and that guidance from generations that were here when those development agreements were made, and we need to make you proud.
Max.
The short answer is yes, and yes, I would advocate for using whatever funds are left. And I may be mistaken, but my father might have been a part of that first deal, and if I am lucky enough to be elected, I would try and abide by the deal he made. So, yes.
Nan.
Absolutely, I support this preservation of the mining structures. I think Friends of Mining History is one of the best new organizations that's been established in the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, however long it's been around. And all you have to do is take a hike up to one of the structures that has not yet been preserved and a hike to another structure that had some reconstruction done to it. And it's a night and day difference. Like Becca, our council, I agree that our council is waiting for an accounting of those funds, but I'm very much in favor of allocating funding towards preservation of the mining structures.
Deanna.
I don't have anything to add to this, but I just want to commend you for getting every single person here on the record to say that they're for that. So I just second that.
I have another question, and this is a one-word answer kind of question. So I think we can roll with that. The City Council has 4 critical priorities: energy, transportation, housing, and social equity. What would the city's 5th critical priority be if we got 5? Let's start with Daniel.
Arts and culture.
Becca.
This isn't a one-word answer, but I think that we need to work on our 4 critical priorities that we have before we add any additional critical priorities, hence they're critical.
Max.
I agree with Becca.
That's your answer.
Well, I mean, if I had to add something, right. I really do go back to the soil mitigation here in town. I think that's that would be a critical priority, but once it's mitigated, then we're back on track. So that would be something else.
Okay. Nan?
Seniors.
Deanna.
2 words: regional collaboration.
Ed.
Nan, you took mine, but I want to go seniors and community.
Are there any other questions from the audience? Right.